Hello, this is Jill Pasternak. Welcome to Crossover, the program that explores the universal language, music. We've just heard the third movement of a piano quartet by Arthur Bliss, performed by the Maggini Quartet, with pianist Peter Donahoe, our guest today on Crossover. On Friday, January 4th, Vox Amadeus will be presenting a concert of music by George Gershwin and Duke Ellington with a distinguished guest, pianist Peter Donahoe. We had the opportunity to speak with Mr. Donahoe from his home in England. With an extraordinarily broad repertoire, he estimates it includes about 160 works, romantic, modern, concertos by Tchaikovsky and Rachmaninoff, works by Olivier Messiaen, with whom he studied in Paris, lesser-known piano concertos, some British composers, including Arthur Bliss, of which he is recording a series now, and a wide range of solo works and chamber music. Welcome to Crossover, Peter Donahoe.
Thank you very much.
I was trying to figure out, according to what I saw, the program, the Gershwin program, yes, with Vox Amadeus, and I see many, many pieces for piano on there. So what are you actually playing? Is it the Rhapsody in Blue only, or are you doing all these other things?
I think I'm in virtually everything in the program, actually. I'm playing the Rhapsody in Blue and the second Rhapsody, which is almost never played, of course, partly because it's very difficult for the orchestra.
And the variations on I Got Rhythm, that's a pretty hefty thing as well.
Yes, indeed. And I think we're doing the concerto and also a piece by Duke Ellington.
Yes, The New World A-Comin'.
Yes.
Yeah. So you're not going to just come in and play one thing.
No.
You're going to sit there on the stage and just knock yourself out, I guess, with a tremendous repertoire. Well, let's talk a little bit about you and your background. Of course, one of the great things is that you won the Tchaikovsky in 1982. You were a joint winner, is that right?
Yes, that's right. That was 30 years ago, this summer, in fact. And seems quite recent to me.
I was going to say, the pride is certainly there. And you also are, you sit as a jury member for the Tchaikovsky as well?
Yes, I've been on a number of juries, and the most daunting one was indeed the Tchaikovsky in 2011. And that was 29 years after I'd been in the competition myself. And every second of what the competitors were going through was going through my mind as well, because it seems such a recent memory, even though it's 30 years.
Well, I went to school with Van Cliburn. We used to eat lunch together.
Oh, really?
I went to Juilliard. Yeah, and we were friends. And I do remember the amazing, you know, of course, it was an amazing thing when he went there.
Yes, oh, it's still an amazing thing. Van Cliburn had, of course, played in Russia since the competition, but he'd never actually been back to the competition itself until this time, last year. And he arrived as a guest of honor at the competition.
I think I saw that, yes,
yeah.
And he congratulated the winner.
That's
and
right.
So on. Yeah, that was really quite.
But he was greeted by the audience in Moscow as just a god, essentially. It was the most fantastic atmosphere, and that's so long afterwards, you know.
Yes, and I think, well, I think that whole competition, you know, was literally put on the map when he played, because this is the competition. There are many, of course, but this is the one, I believe, that people aspire to.
Well, I've actually written quite a lot about that, and it's something that I'm very interested in, because it's so much associated with the political situation and the Cold War and all of that.
Well, yes.
Mm-hmm. And Van Cliburn won the very first one in 1958. At a time,
yes,
when, you know, it was more or less a closed world to us, the Soviet Union and everything. And it was part of the opening up of things. despite the fact that the Cuban Missile Crisis came just afterwards, it still was the beginning of some kind of relationship. And I was part of that in 1982, and it was a really quite extraordinary experience to go from the West with no real knowledge of what the Soviet Union was like, and to actually be so involved in it very suddenly.
Now, when you went, though, you were probably received as well, you know, very, very happily, because you were a contestant,
yeah.
I guess.
Oh, well, the relationship I developed with the Moscow audience is still going on. It's a fantastic experience to play there. And in fact, I'm playing there next week, as it happens. I'm going to Moscow on the 22nd of November.
Oh, my goodness. Isn't that wonderful? Well,
yeah.
You know, good luck. And what are you playing? What do you want to play?
I'm doing a recital in the Tchaikovsky Hall. And but when people ask me what I'm playing, I can never remember. but the main content of the program is Prokofiev. I'm going to play Prokofiev sonatas numbers 1, 3, and 6 in the same half. That sounds like a lot of music, but actually numbers 1 and 3 are very short. So that's going into the Lion's Den playing Prokofiev, that's for sure. It's a little bit like playing Ravel in Paris.
Well, I think when Horowitz went back there, it was really amazing, too. I mean,
yeah.
The Russian audiences are incredible. And I just get, I always believe in art, I mean, as the universal language,
yeah.
Whether it be music or whether it be visual art, especially music, of
Absolutely.
Course, because you don't have to know the language. I know we have had emigres that came here to the United States, couldn't speak a word of English, but they got a job right away sitting in an orchestra
yeah.
playing, you know, and it's really marvelous to
yeah.
see. And it underscores everything that we always talk about, that this is the way, I mean, humanity, you know, survives. And it's really wonderful to hear you say that there is this strong relationship as well.
Well, yes, and the thing about that relationship is it's bridged the change in the Soviet Union to modern Russia as well, and it still goes on in the same way. So it isn't that much associated with politics. The only thing it is associated with is their cultural education. The people, particularly in Moscow, are so knowledgeable about the music. And actually,
they're very sophisticated, I think.
Well, yes, if you went there in some kind of literary capacity or as an actor or something, they'd know your work then as well. There's something very highly cultured about the people. And that, of course, shows in their own performers, because they're very difficult to compete with, I have to say.
Well, you're obviously taking them on, and then playing Prokofiev is not an easy thing to do either. You're under astute criticism, I guess.
Well, I've done it before.
Well, obviously you love doing it.
Yeah.
You kind of throw it away in a way, this part of what you do, and I guess you enjoy it. We listen next to music of William Alwyn, a contemporary of Samuel Barber. This is his second piano concerto written in 1960. And we hear Peter Donohoe, piano soloist with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, James Judd conducting. We've just heard the Piano Concerto No. 2 by William Alwyn, Peter Donohoe, piano soloist, performed with the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra, James Judd conducting. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how you started. I mean, did you start as a young person playing piano?
I started on the piano before I can remember. My mother was a pianist, although she had actually stopped playing by the time I was born, really. But she had a piano, and I was attracted to it when I was really very, well, obviously very young, because I don't remember it. And my parents and grandparents very much encouraged me to play as much as I could. I have this rather strange desire to do it without a teacher and without ever learning to read music. One of those childish obsessions. I will never read music, you know, which obviously didn't come true. But at the age of four, I was still seeing it. And then at the age of seven, they managed to persuade me to go to a proper piano teacher and to learn to read properly. Between the ages of four and seven, I was playing from ear. And I do actually believe, although it was not with any kind of plan, I do believe it was good for me to actually learn to use one's ears and memory and the tonal concepts of what I was playing. I think that made a very big difference in the long term.
Well, you were obviously talented, though. I mean, not everyone can do that. You know, whether it's good or not for you, I mean, you have to have the ability, and obviously you had it. And
we're born with something that perhaps most people aren't, in terms of a combination of a musical ear and a great physical coordination as well. We're very lucky. If you have both of them in the same person, that's a very lucky person. But, of course, on top of that, you need to be very hardworking as well. Very dedicated.
Which you are, it appears to be you are. I mean, you're all over, aren't you?
Yeah, yes. But, you know, I'm thinking in terms of when I was at school and when I was a student, I was really obsessed with music, and I couldn't really claim to be particularly dedicated to anything else. I could have done other things quite well, I think, if I'd wanted to, but I just didn't. I was really into music, and I went and studied at the university, and then I went off to Paris to study with then my favourite contemporary composer, Olivier Messiaen, and then came back, and my career had begun by then. So it's never been really anything else. The only thing is that I did play a lot of other instruments, which, of course, I've now not played since about 1980 or so. But I did have quite a grounding in many other disciplines, which I'm very glad I did. In some ways, I missed it.
Did you ever conduct? Did you ever want to conduct?
I think we all want to conduct. There's something underneath all those instrumentalists that wants to conduct.
I don't think so. I think you have to really, you have to have a certain understanding. I think it's tough. It's tough to conduct. And also, it's a very different world now for conductors. I mean, there used to be an attitude about being a conductor and respecting a conductor, and it was tyrannical even at some point, I think, in Europe. But I think the world, of course, has changed. I remember when Earl Wilde was still alive, I interviewed him, and he talked about piano playing, and he said the trouble is a lot of these young people just play so fast. And I thought that was a rather interesting comment.
When you consider the speed with which he played, it's very interesting.
Really?
Because Earl Wilde had an incredible virtuoso.
He was phenomenal, yeah. And he said they're playing so fast, and maybe went 90. I think he was 90 or 91. Maybe it felt that way. But it was quite an interesting comment. But it's true. I think a lot of the pianists today are really, really talented. Has there been a change in teaching at all that you're aware of? I mean, do you feel that the crop of musicians that come out, how are they able to do things that maybe perhaps they didn't do 30 years ago? In terms of technique and so on?
Actually, the whole concept is very interesting to me because I'm not quite sure that it's true that people play quicker than they used to.
Well, he said that. I just was curious about it.
I think what happens is very often that you don't realize how quickly you're playing yourself. And when you listen to other people play, you become quite critical of the fact that they do something that you absolutely are guilty of yourself. And I know that feeling very well. As far as teaching is concerned, I guess the world's changed and it's affected teaching in the same way that it's affected conducting. You know, there's no real place anymore, whether rightly or wrongly, for someone who is a tyrant in either conducting or teaching.
Yes, of course, and that's good.
And one has to one has to be very much more diplomatic and find ways of encouraging rather than forcing and all that sort of thing.
Mm.
It's much harder work. But I think the long-term results are probably better. But, of course, there are thousands upon thousands of performers now, particularly, by the way, from the Far East and China, even more particularly.
Yes.
And their way of teaching in China is a lot more tyrannical than it is in Europe or the US. So I'm not quite sure what that tells us, but it probably tells us something.
Well, it does because they're very talented and all instruments as well. And I was just wondering about that. I mean, is it more by rote? Is it the old way? You're absolutely right. I mean, you know, in Asia, it's that's the way it is. Yeah. There's lots of talent out there.
Yes, Yes, and lots of developed talent. This is the thing. I think in the old days, perhaps there were just as many talented people, but they just didn't get the opportunity to develop it. When you're talking about Chinese pianists or any other kind of musician from China, we have to remember that what they are excelling in particular, is Western music.
It's the Russian. I keep bringing things up. I had gone to Guam, and I remember two Russian pianists came to Guam.
Yeah.
And it was very interesting. So I think it's the Russian style of playing that was brought over there. I think, is that possible?
Yes, it is. I'm just thinking about that. I mean, the Russian style of playing has been brought over virtually to everywhere, because the historical way of playing and the historical repertoire for the piano or classical music generally, it's been a bit of a tussle essentially until at least the 20th century between Germany and Russia. And so there's one style on one hand and the other on the other, and they've just been fighting for world dominance essentially from the point of view of well, piano playing style.
From the point of view of the piano as well, I guess. Well, it carries through. But I really am quite amazed. You have a very heavy program here, and it's delightful to see you participating in so many different things. What do you think of George Gershwin as a composer?
Well, George Gershwin is a unique man, a unique figure in the history of music. He's obviously the most famous American composer of all, but at the same time as that, he's one of the very few people who came into becoming what he called a serious musician through being so immensely successful in the musical world. As I said, when I say that, I mean composing musicals and songs and being an incredibly popular musician. And that put him in a unique position, I think. Almost no other composer went that way, you know. And not only that, but there's a quite fantastic amount of Russian influence on his style.
Well, yes, because of maybe because of his background. I don't know. I think so. Now, speaking of composers, you are very, very committed to British composers. You have a foundation, is that right?
That's right. It became very obvious to me that we as performers, particularly as instrumental soloists, we're very lax in believing in our own music from this country. And I set about trying to do something about it. There are so many composers in our history. And the great mistake that perhaps people have is to assume that they're copyists, that they're actually composers who copy the styles of other countries. That comes about because it's a basically conservative culture. And the composers are they're rather backward-looking. But that's not meant to be a criticism at all. It's just that they were not revolutionary. So many of our composers didn't hit the headlines in the way that someone like Schoenberg or Bartok or Stravinsky would. They were much more, they were soaking up the styles of many other earlier periods. And so we have a lot of music, a lot of composers, and almost nobody ever plays any of it. And, you know, I wanted to do something about that.
I think it's a wonderful. The Hardy Concerto is absolutely gorgeous, and the music of William Alwyn we play all the time. Didn't he do a lot of theater movie music and during the war?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's what I thought. The Ferguson Concerto for Piano and String Orchestra. I don't even know who Howard Ferguson was, but you recorded that.
Well, actually, both Hamilton Hardy and Howard Ferguson were from Northern Ireland, and they came to England. One to become the principal conductor and music director of the Halley Orchestra in Manchester, long before the Barbarolli days, and the other was eventually Howard Ferguson. He became the principal of the Royal College of Music in London. Was very obviously influenced by Vaughan Williams and has a very English style, even though he was actually born in Ireland. But both of them are wonderful writers for the piano, and Hardy was apparently a great conductor.
Here now, the final movement of Sir Hamilton Hardy's Piano Concerto in B Minor. Our guest, Peter Donohoe, is piano soloist with the Ulster Orchestra conducted by Takuo Yuasa. Thank you. We've just heard Sir Hamilton Harty's Piano Concerto in B Minor, performed by the Ulster Orchestra, conducted by Takuo Yuasa, with our guest today, Peter Donohoe, as piano soloist. As I said, the Harty Concerto is just, well, he's Irish, of course, but your performance is magnificent. So I don't know what to talk to you about more, but a delight to speak with you. I hope I'll see you maybe backstage at the performance and merde, you know, break a leg.
Yes, well, it'd be wonderful to see you there. Thank you very much. It's been great talking to you.
Same here. Thanks so much.
Bye for now.
For a second listen to selected Crossover interviews, visit WRTI.org. Crossover was produced by Jill Pasternak in the studios of WRTI Philadelphia for the WRTI Radio Network. This is Joe Hattie, Crossover's technical producer. Crossover is syndicated nationally by Global Media Group Incorporated. Thanks for listening.